Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for the representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at will.uiuc.edu.
Well, the dollar continues its slump and corn and soybeans make new contract highs. We'll discuss that and so much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk with Craig Parr. He's the manager of commodity hedging for the Andersons out of Maumee, Ohio. Our panelists today are Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing, Greg Johnson of the Andersons, and Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities, all right here in Champaign County. Let's open today's discussion with this question. December corn futures traded to a high of 378 a bushel this week, very near that 380 mark so many feel is essential to put commodities on pace for a run at, well, $4. Will it happen before Christmas? Ed Dunn.
I think you're going to see the March contract trade to $4, Todd, but I'm a little skeptical on D's corn, 22 cents in the next few weeks ahead of some potential profit-taking by fund traders for year end. I'm a little not as optimistic on that.
Ed Dunn is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Clayton Pope, of course, with Clayton Pope Commodities.
If I had to bet, I'd say we won't hit that price before Christmas, but it certainly wouldn't shock me if we did. I mean, this market just is so absolutely mind-blowing in its ability to just keep marching higher and with just almost literally no pullback. So it could happen, but it does seem to me that we're seeing more and more divergence here in some of the technical indicators. The momentum seems to have been lost to a large degree, and I think some weakness around the corner is imminent.
And Greg Johnson with the Andersons.
Yeah, let's make it 3-for-3. I think the March contract will get to 4, but I don't think the Dees will either. So since we all say no, it probably will. But who knows with these funds, like Clayton said. There's all fund buying and very little farmer selling until next year, so anything's possible, but you know, we've had a nice run-up. We've been up 15 weeks in a row in corn, and we can probably go a little bit higher, but $4 on the Dees is another 20-some cents, and that's going to be a stretch before the end of the year.
A couple of extra notes about the commodity markets for the week. July futures, by the way, in the corn pit did tag $4 this week, and the March corn is less than 25 cents away from its all-time high. Taking a look at the corn numbers for the week, December futures, a high of 378 this week, the low at 361 1/4. December futures at 373 3/4 on their settlement price were up 4.5 from last week. December 07 corn at $3.60. It finished 1¼ higher from last week. Let's talk about the U.S. dollar just a bit. This question, as Dave Dickey writes in this weekend's edition of AM 580's Ag Newsletter, is whether or not it will continue to slide and give funds confidence to extend their long positions. That's the U.S. dollar. Will it continue to slide? How do you view the dollar and its interaction with the commodity markets?
Well, the dollar's had a big part to play, Todd, in the reason we are where we are with exports right now. Do I think it continues to slide to a small degree? Yes. It continues to provide support to the export market. I mean, we've sold 45% of this year's corn needs and 52% of this year's soybean projected exports already, and we're a third of the way through. So this dollar definitely has a direct impact on commodities and will continue to do so.
What happens if China, for instance, revalues its currency next month, Clayton?
Well, they've loosened their peg considerably, and if you look at the Chinese currency relative to the dollar over the last 4 or 5 months, it has strengthened significantly. So I think it's an ongoing process. I think I'd be cautious about looking at too much of a one-on-one relationship, inverse relationship of the dollar and commodity prices. I've certainly been hard pressed to find it. If you look at overlay a weekly chart or monthly or whatever, over the last 10 or 20 years, I think it's very hard to find, you know, a short-term relationship, although logically, you know, logic would certainly tell you the relationship would be there in a big way. But I do think that on a grand scale, if we're looking at a real dollar debacle, you know, much more than what we've already seen, you know, something like along the lines of maybe when Nixon closed the gold window back in the early 70s, and all commodity prices just exploded higher. It wasn't just the grains; it was coffee, sugar, and cocoa, and anything you could any tangible good really. If something like that happened, you know, and I think the dollar dropping below 80 would certainly be a sign that that was a very real possibility. Then I think it could become a huge factor immediately. But unless you're looking at it almost an unofficial devaluation, which that would be tantamount to, I have a hard time finding a relationship on a week-to-week basis.
Greg, can you go back? I was intrigued by a couple of those stats that you read off on our exports. Where are we again on the export markets for corn and soybeans?
Corn, we're 45% sold and 25% shipped for the year based on USDA projections. Soybeans, were 52% sold and 30% shipped of USDA projections so far this year.
So, Greg, when you hear numbers like that, what does it tell you about the marketplace and the elevator game over the next 9 months?
Well, I think the demand is good. I don't know that we're necessarily ahead of pace. You know, we are a third of the way through the marketing year already, or close to it anyway. And so, you know, the sales are good so far. Whether we can continue that or not remains to be seen. But from a cash point of view, it's really not about supply and demand at this point. I mean, the funds are buying corn, to some extent beans, but they're buying corn because of the perceived need to buy acres for next year. We could run short if we don't get it, and the funds are, you know, looking at the upside potential versus the downside risk and feeling that that's the place where they want to place their bets at this point.
So let's go ahead and talk about acreage. How do you see the commodity map in the United States changing next season as it relates to cotton, wheat, corn, soybeans, and CRP acreage? Where geographically do the losses and the gains take place?
Well, I think we see the gains in corn in Illinois and Iowa for sure. You know, you talk to seed dealers, you talk to fertilizer dealers, and it sounds like here in central Illinois we're up 15, maybe 20%. Iowa, the same case. Unfortunately, that might be 3 to 4 million acres, and we need 8. I think we need 8 million acres for the market to feel comfortable, and then we need good weather on top of that. So that's where the gainers come. The market has rallied in the right time frame to encourage acres to shift over into corn. The question now remains with the wet weather in Indiana, Ohio, and Michigan, will the eastern Corn Belt, even though they intend to plant more corn, will they be able to plant more corn?
Yeah, and to follow up with your earlier question, when you talk about the cotton in the southeast, with the price dropping so much, I think you're going to see a pickup in corn and soybean acres in the southeast. But again, you're talking marginal ground. I agree with Greg. You're going to see a very big increase with our conversations with our producer clients, with the fertilizer applicators. And in our office, we feel a 7 to 8 million acre increase is not out of the question. I mean, that's a 10% switch. Or a 10% increase from last year gets you back up to 86 million acres. And, you know, we were able to do that back in the 70s with corn well over $3. Why not this year?
And can we maintain the $3 price tag if we do that under normal growing conditions, do you think?
I think it'll be tough to maintain a $3 cash price if we're going to see that kind of an increase. But the market's going to make sure you've got it there for you to make that decision. And the interesting follow-up to that is, what does that do for bean prices next fall? Does it pay off for a guy to, you know, to be a little patient on his soybeans if we're going to see that big of a switch? Maybe you get a big bean rally late in the year.
Yeah, well, that's the other question. Farmers traditionally have held their soybeans. And the question is, at this point with the old crop, is that a wise decision?
I don't think it is to be a holder of cash right now in corn or beans. I think these markets are, on a percentage-wise and actual cents-wise, more above their 50-day averages than I can recall seeing. And, well, I guess you probably would have to go back to 96 to have anything even comparable. Corn is something like 17% above its 50-day moving average right now. And I'm not saying a person shouldn't play for further gains to the upside, but on a risk-reward analysis, I think it's not very wise to do it sitting on a pile of cash grain. I think a person would be much better served as far as handling the risk properly to have something like a vertical call spread on where at least you knew your downside risk.
This weekend in our newsletter, we'll try to tally up the question that we asked of producers a couple of weeks ago, actually 3 weeks ago, I believe, which was how far sold they happened to be. I had 89 responses, and it sure looks like most of them are 50, maybe 60, 70% or above, but we'll tally that up and put it all in the newsletter. What do you think out of the Andersons in Champaign County? How wide an area geographically do you pull from, and how different is this year for corn and soybean sales than it has been in previous years?
I don't think there's any question. It's higher. 50-60% sounds about right, maybe even two-thirds in some areas. And the reason is the last 7 years we've been below $2 and taken LDPs in the fall. And so when farmers had a chance to sell 250, 260 flat price corn in the spring and the summer, they sold that and they probably sold a bigger percentage. And for the first 9 months of the year, they were real happy with those sales. And then, of course, the last 3 months, the market has just exploded. So I think 60% sounds about right.
You know, they're going to be pretty reluctant, Clayton, and Ed, maybe you can jump in on this too. If they're that far sold, they're going to be really reluctant to make cash sales on old crop at this point, it seems to me. Is there a compelling reason that they ought to go ahead and make additional sales beyond, say, 60% at this point in time? And maybe we'll start with you, Clayton, and let Ed jump in on that too.
Well, I think the compelling reason would be what a phenomenal bird in the hand it is. Like you just said, March corn is less than 25 cents from its all-time high. It's kind of like, you know, what's the guy want? It's already been an absolute grand slam if you're holding on to cash now. The bulls and bears make money, the pigs get slaughtered. So I think it's just harder and harder to justify holding something with significant downside risk at this point. Just to return to the 50-day moving average right now would be 50 cents in corn.
I think if you were to somehow pull a rally out of this thing and get flat price corn up over 375, Todd, I think the guys, if you're 60% sold, you're going to see them sell half the crop of what they've got left and leave themselves with some gambling stocks. But I agree with Clayton's earlier statement. Guys need to take the bird in the hand and get some sales made, especially if they're going to start paying extra storage charges after the 1st of January, and most are. You're already paying 15, 18 cents to get there. Why add to it when you can net this out and take the money and pay some bills?
07 crop?
You need to be, in our opinion, at least 20% sold at these levels. You're going to find some that are going to argue for 50% sold with flat price corn up near 350. The only reason that you wouldn't want to be that aggressive in some instances is the market has not shown a sign of telling you that we've turned the corner and ready to go south.
Let's take a look at some of the other numbers as they came through this week. December wheat, a high of 508, the low at 480. It settled at $5, unchanged from last week. July futures at 503 were down 3/4. December oats at 256 were off a penny and a half. Soy complex for the week. January beans at 695 3/4 on the high. The low at 675 3/4. Their settlement price down 8 1/4 from the previous week at $6.76. In the NOVE contract for next year at 726 3/4. Were off a penny and a quarter for the week. From the Mercantile Exchange, December live cattle, a high this week of 87.45, a low at 85.07.5. They had a settlement price at 85.50. They were down 2.15 for the week. And the feeder cattle at 96.97.5 for the January contract, off $1.52.5. Lean hog, 63.17.5 on the high, the low at 60.70. Their settlement price down $1.85 at 61.12.5, and the Feb bellies at 91.97.5. We're down 40. Greg, I want to take this one up with you. Just soybean meal was down sharply this week with a $5 drop Friday. The two nearby contracts are setting on what appears to me to be good support levels. Do we need to be concerned about the price of bean meal next week and its relationship to soybeans?
Well, soybean meal comprises 2/3 of the value of soybeans. So, yes, the way soybean meal goes, soybeans will follow. The fundamentals just aren't as bullish for soybeans or meal, for that matter, as they are for corn. Luckily, corn has been rallying enough that beans have been able to tag along, but beans are definitely a follower. I think for the month of November, corn was up 16, 17, 18%. Soybeans were up 6%. So they have tagged along, but they are definitely not a leader. And there's some rumors that when the December crop report comes out from USDA, that 565 million bushel carryout will be increased to maybe 580 or 585. So definitely things aren't bullish this year, but we didn't think corn was bullish until next year, and the funds got in early. So, you know, it depends what the funds do, but there's definitely downside in beans, more so than in corn.
Well, to follow up with that, there's no doubt that the only reason soybeans in the market itself is where it is because of corn. The NOPA crush came out this week. We used a heck of a lot of beans. We crushed a lot of them, but the oil and meal stocks are building at a pace that even the market wasn't ready for. And I think that's partially why you see the funds coming in and selling the beans or selling the bean meal and even the oil off like you did with those building stocks. But they're not going to let that spread get out of whack. So unless corn takes a beating, you're just not going to see the soybeans fall like they should based on the fundamentals that are out there.
On the day trade, Clayton, it looks like the Friday dump and meal was also turned around and they bought the oil on that. Why was that the case? Do you know?
Well, most of this move, over not only this rally here, but the one that kind of peaked last May, funds clearly had a preference for oil over meal. And I think the logical conclusion would be that there is some kind of energy motivation behind their play because of the biodiesel plants for bean complex and ethanol for corn, of course. But so I guess I'd look at that. But I guess I'm skeptical and would caution people, you know, listeners, to put too much faith in funds being real fundamentally driven here. I just don't think they are. Frankly, I don't think most of these fund managers are even perusing over supply-demand reports. I think it's a technical game for them. I think they might have had something to do with choosing these markets in the beginning because they know that there was significant bullish attitudes about, you know, usage and so forth down the road. But I think it's a very fickle crowd. It's hot money. And at some point, this thing will peak, and it will probably peak not because of any change in any fundamental situation. And the funds will run and let the fundamentals be damned.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. Unseasonably mild November weather came to a crashing end this week as the first serious cold air outbreak of the season and winter weather ended climatological fall and launched climatological winter. Temperatures this week averaged 20 to 25 degrees above normal or more until late Wednesday when the cold air finally started to push across Illinois. Illinois experienced several consecutive days with highs reaching the low and mid-60s, and while not unprecedented, it is certainly not typical of late November. Overnight low temperatures early in the week were actually several degrees higher than the normal highs for this time of the month in some parts of Illinois. The weekend and early part of this past week were dry, which made the warmer weather that much more enjoyable. Significant precipitation developed late Tuesday into Wednesday ahead of the cold front, and it was heavy across western and northern Illinois, where 1.5 to 3 inches of rain accumulated. This brought relief to the heart of the remaining drought area in Illinois. And it was just a prelude to the main event, which spread a variety of precipitation across the state Thursday night into early Friday. The first week of December will be, well, like the first week of December might be expected to be. Temperatures will remain below normal during the week, and there looks to be a chance for snow about midweek when a clipper-type system scoots through the Midwest. For the Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
And I'm Todd Gleason. This is WILL Urbana, AM 580. You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists today are Greg Johnson of the Andersons, Clayton Pope of Clayton Pope Commodities, and Ed Dunn of Strategic Farm Marketing, all of Champaign County. Joining us now from Ohio is the manager of commodity hedging for the Andersons, Craig Parr. He's been with the Andersons since 1991. He spent a few years at the facility here in Champaign County. Craig formerly was heard on WILL, by the way, as a cash grain analyst and a panelist on this program. Thanks for joining us as a guest today, Craig. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me, Todd.
So how's your job of hedging changed with the increasing demand for corn to operate the Andersons ethanol plants?
Well, I would say that when it gets as volatile as what we've seen with corn prices and with the significant change in anybody's business structure with the addition of ethanol, it certainly becomes what I would classify as extremely exciting, even though the volatility does cause people to sit on edge occasionally.
Hey, Craig, Ed here. You know, you look at the supply and demands, and you see the growth in ethanol in each one of these, and we've gone up another, 30%, 40% from $1.6 billion to $2.2 this coming year for projected usage. With the increase in corn prices, the potential the definitely decreasing margins, do you question that growth from your seat and say that potential is still maybe a couple of years away because the fires have kind of slowed down a little bit?
Well, actually, that's an excellent question. Ed, I think there's a couple things as we start talking about even looking at today's margins for ethanol. It's certainly a significant number. We've seen ethanol prices rally a good 30 cents in just the last couple, 3 weeks, causing margins per gallon to be somewhere upwards around 90 to a dollar per gallon if you have ethanol today. Now, certainly, when we start talking about the acreage potential for next year, we start talking about how the higher price potential can impact corn acres and decisions for the farmers this winter, I think we certainly have to look at it in terms of what people refer to as the crunch margin or ethanol revenue streams that can be generated, and that all boils down to ethanol price. It is king, and even in the deferred months, we're looking at revenues that could be 60 to 75 cents. It's going to be coming hand in hand as we talk about corn prices. What people anticipate corn prices will do will also be determined by what people think ethanol prices will do.
Craig, to take that a step further, a lot of people, I think, next year anticipating, a 600 to 800 million bushel increase maybe in the ethanol category from 2.15 to 2.8 or whatever. Maybe continuing on Ed's question a little bit, I mean, do you think that the narrowing of these margins is put some of the construction of all these ethanol plants, slowed them down, and not to mention just the scarcity of qualified firms to put these things up? I'm a little skeptical that they're really popping up as quickly as the trade is assuming.
I think that is correct. I mean, there's a couple things. The spot margins are good. As we just mentioned, they are very good. The deferred margins are not as good. In fact, in some cases, it would be half of what you could get today. I think what the market's objective will be over the next several months will be to do what it always does, and that is to take out profitability of the marketplace. Whether or not that's corn rallies significantly to eat into the margins of ethanol, or whether or not that means that ethanol prices and corn both converge, or whatever it does, but the market's typical objective is to squash margins. And if you look at it in terms of the players that are involved in this, if you really want to look at it, some of that will shake out. 110 million gallon plants that are planned for the Eastern Corn Belt, they'll start to go away, whether or not they just can't quite get that financing anymore, or the banker becomes a little bit more questionable about the volatility in the marketplace, higher priced corn, squashing margins. I think that will shake a lot of the more shaky potential projects out in the East. But the market won't know that in time. I think what the market will do is it'll always have to play the guessing game until we get the crop planted next year, which will cause huge volatility, specifically as it relates to corn, specifically as it relates to 2007 Dees, and that should filter over a little bit more in the Dees 08.
Hey, Craig, can you talk a little bit about the influence of the funds? I know that the CFTC in their commitment to traders report shows funds. The large speculator along 1.4 billion bushels of corn plus. Do you get the sense that those funds are in this for the long haul, or are they going to bail out? Are we going to see what kind of feel do you get for the fund activity that we've seen over the last 6 months?
Well, we can kind of correlate that to the Chicago Board of Trade, and you can go to any futures exchange and find that the increased interest in commodities and in the energy markets has been significant. And I think we'll look at it and say the perspective of just we've been focusing a lot on corn, but that seems to be where most of the attention is. Look at corn prices. Typically every year they trade 260, 265, 270 when a futures contract starts to trade early on. And we're looking at a dollar plus or minus since an average trading value. And I think funds are not really concerned with a sizable position and a potential dollar downside. I think that allows them to hold on to it for the longer haul. I think they're interested in the high volatility and the big payouts. I mean, I think that when you define funds, it can be 30 different categories, but typically they're not fearful of a 50 or a 75 or even a dollar move.
So they'll continue to roll and buy?
Well, I think so. I mean, if you were a betting man, even if you were looking at coming into the summer months this 2007 crop year, farmer hasn't made his decision, The objective of the market, as I mentioned before, is to squash margins and the potential for corn to really be volatile, which they love. I would think that would entice them to just stay long or even get longer.
You know, you mentioned crunch and squash. I think those were the same thing, so I'm not quite certain. Can you teach me how to figure that? What are the things that go into it?
Well, a lot of times people in the ethanol business will start to refer, much like a bean crusher does, the crush margins or gross revenues generated after you sell your ethanol, buy your corn, buy your natural gas, and sell your DDG. That is the net effect on a per-gallon basis. Today's revenues would approximate about a dollar gross margins, roughly, for an ethanol plant. If you had ethanol today, in the deferred months, it's closer to something like 60 cents per gallon. That doesn't include the net effect of variable and fixed expense from your ethanol plant. You're going to take off probably somewhere between 25 and 45 cents for those.
I'd like to switch gears here for a second here. I'd really like to kind of poll everybody's thoughts. The talk of deliveries, it seems like every major delivery period, people beat the drums and talk about what a big deal it is, and the news comes out. For the life of me, I really don't see much valuable information from it or effect on flat prices up or down. I mean, it seems like sometimes big deliveries are a buy, sometimes they're a sell. I mean, Craig, from your standpoint up there with, you know, the large commercial, I mean, do you, like, see some valuable information, even if there's big stoppers or not? It doesn't seem like it really matters. But what do you think?
It is becoming less and less, predictable. I mean, it is, as you mentioned, typically when you have big deliveries, people like to buy big deliveries, and the spread then, in effect, starts to see the front-end month rally, and the spread narrows, even though we had big deliveries. I think it is important to make that information transparent, whether or not it's the fund category, which is now becoming questionable with the wheat fiasco or the wheat situation, if you will. The fact that we've got more and more players in the commodity markets need to be defined better and better if you're going to try to get what you really need out of the information you're referring to, a substantial ability to look at the information that's provided, who's making deliveries, why are people stopping, you name it. We need to have that still to be an efficient spreader and risk manager.
Craig, we appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you.
Craig Parr is the manager of commodity hedging for the Andersons, headquartered in Maumee, Ohio. Now a final word from our panelist, Ed Dunn.
Well, I think if you've got some old crop stocks to hold on to, you can be patient, but I wouldn't be afraid to sell half of what you're holding on to before Christmas. We could see that sell-off at any time.
Clayton Pope?
These markets are offering fantastic potential right now, both for old stocks and new, too. It's a perfect time to learn how to use the tools that are available to you if you don't know how to do it already.
And Greg Johnson.
The odds of us getting the planting mix exactly right for corn and beans next spring is probably minimal. We'll either have too much corn and not enough beans, or the vice versa. So there's going to be marketing opportunities. Stay tuned.
Our thanks to Clayton Pope, Ed Dunn, and Greg Johnson, all of the Champaign County area, for making it in on a blustery Friday afternoon. That wraps up this edition of Commodity Week. Be sure to visit our website at willag.org. Have a great week. I'm Todd Gleason.
Commodity Week is made possible with support from AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. Information on the web at agrigold.com or by contacting Regional Sales Manager Scott Williamson at 217-778-6485 for the representative nearest you. And with support from ADM, using corn and oil seeds to create biofuels, agriculture's answer to diminishing fossil fuels. ADM, resourceful by nature. Commodity Week is a production of listener-supported public radio at the University of Illinois. To learn more, visit us online at willuiuc.edu.